I'm Taylor.
I'm Kat.
And welcome to Square Mile of Murder. Hello. Welcome here. Welcome back. Welcome for the first time, maybe. Maybe not.
Just welcome.
Just, yeah, hi. Glad you're here.
This week, we're talking about diamonds and other expensive sparkly things with the story of the Pink Panthers. No, not the adorable pink animated big cat who appears in a series of comedy mystery films. We're talking about an organized crime ring with no real organization. We know, it makes no sense. But listen up, because all will soon become as clear as a flawed pink diamond.
Ooh. What does the Pink Panther theme song say? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Durham.
Yeah.
Because that's the joke. Where does the Pink Panther come from? Durham. Durham. Durham.
Oh my god, that's so bad.
I think it's quite a local joke, obviously, because I'm like an hour away from Durham.
Yeah, it might be. I loved the Pink Panther cartoons as a kid. And then my dad was like, oh, well, we should really watch the Pink Panther films with, like, Peter Sellers. And I spent the entire time watching one of these films waiting for the little cartoon guy to show up. And finally, aww, after, like, an hour, I was like, hey, what's up with this? And my dad was like, no, there's no cartoons. It's just, like, it's in the name. It's not...
Yeah.
The same thing. I was like, well, that's stupid.
Yeah, I remember watching the cartoon as a kid. And I think I've seen the films, but yeah, they don't really stick in my memory. I'm like, there's not enough cartoon cats.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I do. I should go watch some of those now as an adult, because they'd probably land a lot better since they're like mystery films.
Yeah.
But yeah, highly recommend. Back to this.
Yeah.
There's French in this upcoming paragraph, so I'm sorry in advance. On October 2nd, 2016, a group of five individuals broke into an apartment at the Hôtel de Portales. That's Italian. Portales, perhaps. A luxurious five-star apartment hotel located in Paris's 8th arrondissement. I can do that one. It's just a long word. After threatening the concierge, they gained access to the suite and threatened the occupant at gunpoint, tying up her arms and legs, putting her in the suite's bathtub as she begged for her life before placing duct tape over her mouth as a gag. The group then stole $10 million worth of jewelry, including a $4 million ring, and escaped just as the victim managed to free herself of the plastic ties around her wrists, rip off the duct tape, and scream for help.
If this Paris Fashion Week robbery sounds a bit familiar, that might be because the victim was none other than Kimberly Noel Kardashian West.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, regardless of what you think about Kim K, her OJ defending father, and her family of reality TV stars who fill up the gossip columns every week, she is still a human being. And, you know, has real feelings, and while I'm sure all of her presumably very well-insured jewellery is replaceable, I think we can all agree that having someone break into your hotel, shoving a gun in your face, and tying you up would be pretty terrifying, no matter how much money you have in the bank.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not great.
No.
Not a fun time in any way. So, in the weeks following the robbery, there were suspicions in the tabloids that the allegations were false, or that the whole thing had been staged. This was in part due to a video surfacing days later of Kardashian using a phone she claimed had been stolen in the robbery, and in part due to Lochte Gate. God, here we go. Lochtegate was the name given to the scandal surrounding U.S. Olympic swimmer Ryan Lochte, along with three other members of the U.S. Olympic swim team, Jimmy Feagan, Gunnar Bentz, and Jack Conger. The group originally claimed that they had been robbed at gunpoint by armed robbers posing as police during a night out in Rio de Janeiro, but it later transpired that the, quote, armed robbers were actually armed security guards for the petrol station that Lochte and co. turned up at, urinated outside the bathroom, and vandalized a framed poster. That's not really a good way to endear yourself to anyone.
Nah.
And the, quote, stolen money turned out to be money that they had paid to the guards for damages immediately following the incident, equivalent to about $50. For a while, following Lochtegate, celebrity allegations of theft, especially the very high-profile kind, were generally met with skepticism among the media and general public.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
At the end of the 2016 Olympics?
Yeah, I do. And then that was pretty much the end of his swimming career, right?
Yeah, he lost, like, loads of sponsors, and basically no one really liked him because played into, like, a really big white privilege thing of going to, I mean, like, the Rio Olympics were already under a massive microscope, and because of, like, so many people there living in poverty, that to then, like, piss up against the outside of a bathroom, instead of going into the bathroom, vandalize, like, it says it was, like, a framed poster, so I don't know. I can't remember the ins and outs of that. But to do that and then claim that you were robbed at gunpoint when actually you were being made to pay like $50, which to them at that level of sport with the amount of sponsors you have, that is like chump change.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So despite the media speculation about whether or not the robbery was real or a publicity stunt, and a lot of victim blaming from fashion icons such as Karl Lagerfeld about flaunting such a wealth of jewels on social media, but having no security to protect them. Like, yeah, she deserved to be tied up and robbed at gunpoint because she had all these expensive things and photos of them on Instagram.
No.
Like, in those circles, who the fuck doesn't flaunt their wealth like that?
Honestly, though.
Like,
that's like her, that's literally her job in a way. So,
I mean, I have many feelings about the Kardashians and I'm weirdly fascinated by them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, same. I've never watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians or whatever their new show is called, but I'm still fascinated when I see, like, people are like, especially like BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed seemed to go mad for them. And I'm like, you made like a whole article I wasted 5 minutes of my life on just to say that somebody cheated on someone else, or, you know, Kylie and Chris went to the car wash and did their own shopping. I'm like, it's weird, but it fascinates, like, I don't understand it, but it fascinates me at the same time.
Yeah. My dad and I used to watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Oh, wow. Which is,
like, not the kind of thing that, and he loved the show about Ice-T and his wife. It's like, Coco loves ice or something, like, random like that. Like, just the weirdest shit. But yeah.
Of all the shows that you watched, I never expected you to say that you watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, God, yeah. Like, not religiously, but, like, because it was on E, like, they would always have reruns of it on, like, during the day or during the weekends or something. So you could sit down and watch 5 hours of them in a row. And it's just absolutely mind-numbing. But, again, also, like, fucking fascinating in a way.
Please.
So, no, I get it.
It just fascinates me. But anyway, regardless of whether or not you are an influencer and how many millions you have, like, you don't deserve this. Thank you very much, Mr. Lagerfeld.
Yeah, no.
And the authorities took it seriously and began investigating. Now, according to an article by The Guardian, this kind of like large-scale aggravated burglary is supposedly quite rare in Paris. And quoting the French police spokesperson, the article said, "It was really the celebrity who was targeted," adding that the stolen possessions had, quote, "been seen and noticed via social media." Mm. And it was probably the result of organized crime.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. So the press began referring to the thieves as the grandpa robbers due to their senior or nearing senior age. But it is suspected by some that the theft of Kardashian's jewellery is linked to the Pink Panthers. In 2017, 17 persons of interest were detained by French authorities, 16 of whom were later arrested. And in 2020, French prosecutors were seeking to prosecute 12 of those, including the 5 who allegedly broke into Kim Kardashian's hotel. And at least one of those 5 is reportedly set to plead no contest, according to Kim Kardashian's Wikipedia page. But as yet, there have been no convictions.
Huh.
Despite there being no convictions, according to Vanity Fair, an article which is linked in the show notes, one of the alleged thieves, Eunice Abbas, released a book titled "I Sequestered Kim Kardashian," in which he mocks Kardashian for trying to call 911. The emergency number in France and the rest of the EU is 112.
Jesus, that's rude.
Yeah. So, okay, I robbed this woman, but she was stupid because she tried to call 911. Did you know, right, in the UK, 911 goes through?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah, I did know that.
Like, so our emergency number obviously is 999, but because so many kids, because, like, American popular culture is so prolific and just everywhere, kids were growing up not knowing, like, seeing 911.
Yeah.
In, like, so many TV shows and films and stuff, that eventually it got linked to 999 because so many kids were trying, like, genuine emergencies were trying to ring it. And I'm like, what was your schooling like? Like, I'm sure, I swear, every few months there was, like, someone from the fire service, someone police or the ambulance or something. Or the lifeboat, actually, because we're on the coast. There was always someone coming in to talk to us about emergency services. Like, kids today, they got to rely on American TV shows.
American TV. I can't tell you how many times I was taught to stop, drop, and roll as a child. Like, just every other week, I feel like there was a fireman in our classroom, starting in literally like daycare. When I was like 3, I remember sitting there with these firefighters being like, okay, so stop, drop, and roll. And then if you see us in our masks and your house is on fire, like, we're not scary people, we're there to help you. Just like, yeah, okay.
Wow.
I'm 3, but okay. And then I was terrified that our house was going to catch on fire. So I think it may have backfired a little bit.
we were always taught about, like, gas. Like, we never had, gas wasn't put into our village, like central heating gas, wasn't put into our village until about 15 years ago. So growing up, nobody had it. So we were all terrified of it, but nobody knew it. Like, nobody had that experience because we all had, like, either electric or oil or coal.
Yeah.
We all grew up being absolutely terrified of gas boilers because none of us knew how they worked.
Oh, God.
But yeah. So if you're in the UK, you can call 911 and it will work.
That's good. You heard it here first. Or hopefully not, actually, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Now, according to that same Vanity Fair article, Oma Eit Kedachi, one of the organisers of this Paris theft, wrote to Kim Kardashian from prison after being arrested in 2017. And in this letter, he apologises and acknowledges the emotional and psychological damage he inflicted on Kim Kardashian and her family.
Yeah.
So, seems like they have at least one person in custody who should be.
Yeah, yeah.
But who are the rest of the Pink Panthers, and how did they get their seemingly harmless nickname?
Well, the Pink Panthers are believed to have been active for about 20 years now. One of the earliest heists to be connected to the Pink Panthers is the theft of the Millennium Necklace, worth about $1 million, from the Venetian Casino in Los Angeles in 2002. I hiccuped in the middle of that year in 2002. According to BuzzFeed, the previous year, a jewelry store in Biarritz, France, had been robbed in a smash and grab, but before carrying out the theft, the group had painted a bench outside the shop so that there would be nobody sitting near the store when they robbed it. That's clever.
Mm.
Although some dispute the Pink Panthers' involvement in the Las Vegas theft because it wasn't violent like most of their other known thefts. It was the following year that they would acquire their now famous moniker and the first confirmed theft linked to the Pink Panthers. In May 2003, the flagship store of luxury jewelry chain Graff in Mayfair, London, was serving a Kosovan man named Nebojsa Danik, described as being eccentric with an awkward pompadour wig which stood out. I like that. As Danik was examining a 12-carat ring worth almost $500,000, he asked staff if they had a smaller ring. But before they had a chance to show him any others, he pulled out a .357 Magnum and ordered everyone to the floor.
As great. You do.
Yeah.
I love that he asked for a smaller ring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's weird.
See, in that situation, I feel like you'd big it up, right? Like, you'd get them to take all of the most expensive rings out of the case, so you don't even have to worry about that. And then you do the robbery.
So, as Danik pulled out the gun, a Montenegrin man named Predrag Vujosevic entered through the door that Danik had propped open when he first entered the store. Vujosevic used a hammer to smash display cases and remove 47 pieces of jewellery, and the pair made off with £23 million worth of jewels, which is equivalent to about $28 million.
That's a lot.
That's not bad for 5 minutes' work.
Yeah, honestly.
Vujosevic managed to get away, but a security guard caught Danik and, according to BuzzFeed, sat on him, knocked his wig off, and then mocked him for how stupid he looked in the wig.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Scotland Yard quickly identified Montenegrin man Milan Jovetic as an accomplice, along with his girlfriend Anna Stankovic, and got a warrant to search their London apartment. Now, inside the apartment, they found fake Italian passports, along with a blue diamond ring worth about $500,000, hidden in a jar of face cream, similar to the hiding place used in the film Return of the Pink Panther, hence the group's name, the Pink Panthers.
I like it. But also, gross, like, so squishy.
Yeah, like, it wouldn't be my first choice if I was trying to hide a ring, because then you've got to clean it. What if it's, like, okay, I'm going to assume that this is, like, super, like, really pure gold rings, but, like, what if it's, like, a bad batch and it just mixes wrong with the face cream and it reacts and it all goes green or something?
Yeah.
I think that's a very poor person problem, I think, when you're stealing jewelry.
Well, or even more, like, if it's such pure gold, it's probably really soft. So if there's some something like acidic in the cream or something could like damage the, I don't know. Anyway, maybe, I wouldn't want to go digging through it.
Maybe they like wrapped it in like a little sandwich bag or some cling film first.
I feel like that's worse somehow. We're getting lower and lower brow with our hiding place.
Yeah, but we were never highbrow.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I think we peaked when you went to prep school. I peaked when I went to a former polytechnic for undergrad.
You know, I think my prep school would say that I peaked in prep school too. So... In fact, many people at my prep school told me I had peaked before even arriving. So, you know, it's all good. So, yeah, the Pink Panthers. So, Jovetic was eventually arrested in 2004. Was eventually arrested, and in 2004 he was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison. But Danique received a 15-year sentence. In 2005, Vujosevic was arrested crossing the border from Italy into France, but he refused to speak about the London heist. He was also wanted in connection with thefts at jewelers in Amsterdam, Geneva, Barcelona, and other cities across Western Europe. Now, we couldn't find what happened to Vujosevic regarding the Graf theft in London, but according to BuzzFeed, his mother said he received a 9-year prison sentence. Other than the blue diamond ring, none of the jewelry has been recovered. Anna Stankovic was detained in the UK as an illegal immigrant, according to the Daily Mail, which, yes, the Daily Mail. We know. You know.
We hate them too.
Yeah. We get it. Given how xenophobic they are, we were hoping that their articles would at least have the nationalities of the group, but no luck, so we couldn't actually find out where Stankovic was from. So
yeah, I was like looking to try and find out like where she was from, because I was like, well, if she was detained as an illegal immigrant, was she imprisoned? Was she repatriated? Like, what happened? And then the Daily Mail didn't say, and I'm like, you are the most xenophobic fuckers in this country. No, actually, you're not. But, you know, especially at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, they didn't have anything, just that she was an illegal immigrant.
Well, that's all they really need to know, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe we're just giving them too much credit.
Too much credit, yeah. too much credit in their research abilities, honestly. Fact-checking.
Not their strong suit.
No. It is also worth noting that in 2003, none of the former Yugoslavian states were members of the EU, so did not have freedom of movement through the EU, including the UK, at that time. Alas, no longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Today, Slovenia and Croatia are members of the EU, but Serbia, Montenegro, Bosnia and Herzegovina, North Macedonia, and Kosovo, which is only partially recognized as independent from Serbia, are not members of the EU, but are in varying stages of applying for membership, except for Kosovo.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought that Serbia and Montenegro were in the EU, but they're not.
Mm. But they're trying to be.
The Pink Panthers network extends far beyond these four people involved in the graft heist in London. Now, the Wikipedia page on the Pink Panthers states that there are an estimated 800 members of the Pink Panthers.
Fucking hell.
All believed to be from former Yugoslavian countries. Yeah. 800, like...
That's too many.
That's like the entirety of the five families.
Yeah.
Easy. And then some.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, and the group is believed to have been founded by Dragan Mičić in Belgrade in Serbia, or what's now Serbia. Now, Dragan Mičić has supposedly been on the run since breaking out of prison in 2005.
Hmm.
Now, speaking of breaking out of prison, supposedly none of the Pink Panthers are worried about going to prison because they know that someone will eventually break them out.
Good. That's good.
Now, the Guardian article that we mentioned earlier, which is linked in the show notes, also references an interview with the Daily Beast given by a former member of the Pink Panthers, known as Punch, who describes the group as kind of similar to Al-Qaeda.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's who you want to compare yourself to.
Yeah, lacking in like the conventional chain of command that is usually seen in organized crime.
Okay.
The Daily Beast article is behind a paywall, so I've linked it in the show notes if anyone has like subscription or whatever. Go read it, but we couldn't, so all we could read was the first couple of paragraphs and the bit quoted by The Guardian. So I feel like there needs to be more context.
Yeah.
Because just a lacking in like a conventional chain of command is a big leap to being kind of, which we were a bit like Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, it's just the same.
So Punch also was reportedly also a former member of the YACS, which is Yugoslavians, Albanians, Croatians and Serbians crime group, who the Daily Beast refer to as a sort of precursor to the Pink Panthers. And he claims that members of the Pink Panthers were part of the military in Yugoslavia, and following the Yugoslav wars in the 1990s and the breakup of the country, they became like samurai without a nation.
Wow. So
it's a lot of big words and a lot of big claims being thrown about.
It's all very grandiose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Punch elaborates, saying, "They don't have a master, no leader, no head and no tail. All they do is go by their intelligence." Okay. He also said that all the Pink Panthers have college educations. They speak multiple languages fluently. They all play soccer. And they're athletes. Well, that's nice for them, I guess.
Yeah, it's not what you'd think of as, like, typical organized crime of, like, you either grow up in it or you kind of get recruited into it as a last resort, like, you know, when there's no opportunities sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. And they can all play soccer together. That's nice for them.
Mm.
Similarly, Wikipedia describes most of the members of the Pink Panthers, both men and women, as having extensive military and paramilitary backgrounds, and that following the end of the Yugoslav wars, they made criminal use of their militaristic skills. Now, this wasn't uncommon during the 1990s and early 2000s, both during the conflicts that made up the Yugoslav war and in the years following, as the newly independent states rebuilt themselves. Organized crime and trafficking found a space to flourish.
And let's be honest, much like what we're seeing with the war in Ukraine today, the EU, the UN and NATO weren't tripping over themselves to stop the bloodshed in Yugoslavia. And NATO eventually undertook a very bloody carpet bombing campaign across the Balkans in 1999, which is not remembered kindly by many former Yugoslavians. There are still, like, I was reading an article like last year, I think it was, there's still people living in refugee camps in the Balkans.
Jesus.
Now, while NATO, the UN, EU, all of them, weren't rushing to help in Yugoslavia, they were imposing very heavy sanctions on Yugoslavia, which, according to The Guardian, quote, determined the fate of the Pink Panthers. As industry collapsed, people were, quote, either forced or willing to take part in criminal activities, Once you have to smuggle food, soap, or diesel to make life possible, what's to stop you smuggling arms, drugs, and people to make life profitable?
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. And The Guardian claims that these organised crime rings trafficking in drugs, guns, and human beings are still active today. If you can traffic guns, drugs, and sex slaves across the world, what's to stop you adding some diamonds into the mix, really? Now, we have talked before about the Yugoslav wars and offended, you know, our entire Southeastern European listenership, and about the conflict in the Balkans during the 1990s, way back in episode 42 on Baba and Noika. So go back and listen to the beginning of that episode if you want a refresher on a very, very brief history of Yugoslavia and the Balkan nations. And there is also a very, very long read article by The New Yorker, which are partly used for fact checking because it's 17,000 words long.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Which is why I didn't read all of it.
Oh my god.
It is linked in the show notes if you want to go and read a dissertation-length article.
More power to you.
But it does talk about the economical impact of the Yugoslav wars in the 1990s and how it links to organised crime in the region and the Pink Panthers. And the article also describes how Yugoslavian and eventually Serbian leader Slobodan Milosevic essentially turned Yugoslavia / Serbia into a criminal enterprise. Well, turned the government into like a criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
Milosevic was later indicted on war crimes by the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, part of the International Criminal Court, and stood trial in The Hague from 2002 until he died in his cell in 2006.
So this brings us to two theories put forward by BuzzFeed about the motivations of the Pink Panthers. One theory recognizes that all the known members of the Pink Panthers are from former Yugoslavian countries where, as Kat just said, organized crime was commonplace, both during and following the conflict. So it's theorized that the Pink Panthers have a grudge against Western Europe and the European Union, who are generally considered very wealthy countries in comparison to many Eastern European countries, including the former Yugoslavian countries, and that these jewel heists are a way of bringing money back to Eastern Europe in a Robin Hood complex kind of way, as well as a kind of revenge against the EU and Western Europe for their action or inaction during the Balkan conflict, meaning that the group is held together largely by a shared geographical and cultural history.
I understand that. But
it all seems a bit like lofty, like we are going to still steal millions and millions of dollars of priceless jewelry for, you know, political revenge.
Yeah.
Geopolitical revenge just seems like a bit much, and it seems like it ignores the sort of selfish nature of jewel thievery.
Yeah. If... Yeah, yeah. And this all come... This does come from, like, what Interpol have said. So their task force focused on the Pink Panthers is actually a task force charged with pursuing jewel thieves from former Yugoslavian countries.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to assume Interpol knows a lot more than BuzzFeed.
I mean, you'd hope that they would know what they're talking about, but
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah,
it just seems like, yeah, to me that feels like half of the story. Like, yeah, there's something missing. There's some other thing that like made them say, okay, so like this is why we're gonna do it, but then what's the, and this is how we decided on this mode, yeah, of crime kind of thing.
It sounds half-baked the way it's presented.
Yeah,
but I think there has to be a lot more behind it, because you can't just jump from Well, we arrested a few Serbians and a few Montenegrins, so it's a whole big Robin Hood complex conspiracy against Western Europe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The second theory put forward by BuzzFeed is based on an interview that appeared in the New Yorker dissertation that I mentioned earlier. And in it, there's a man named Eugene who claimed to have knowledge of Pink Panther operations. Now, according to Eugene, who I believe is not his real name.
Probably not, no.
The Pink Panthers don't specifically hate the EU or Western Europe. Quote, they hate everyone.
Yeah, he said, there you go.
They hate Germany, the Vatican, the USA, their own governments. They're junkies who hate. You get a call from a guy, you meet 10 other guys, and you get paid. Some are cousins, some are good friends. All of them will be in prison in 5 or 10 years.
Oh, God.
Now, in that same New Yorker article, there is another anonymous source who is a Serbian man who talks to the journalist and says that there are less than 60 members of the group and that while they don't know each other, everything is organized at a higher level, but there is also no one leader.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're starting to understand why this article is so long.
Yeah, right? Because it's really fucking confusing.
Yeah.
See, like, the idea of, like, they just hate everyone and they want to get paid. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah. That makes more sense to me. Because, like, organized crime doesn't need to have an ideology behind it.
Yeah. Like, you get swept up in it and you just keep rolling.
And if you are living in a country that's been, you know, just coming out of, like, almost 10-year war.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to find a way to put money on the table. People will do anything.
Yeah.
So it could, like, easily be, like, a mix of the two, I think.
Yeah, I think. And I think it probably is. Because,
yeah.
Yeah. That would make the most sense.
Yeah.
But regardless of the reasons behind the Pink Panthers, it's estimated that they have collectively stolen around $1 billion worth of jewelry across 35 countries in the past 20 or so years. And between 2002 and 2010, they hit at least 152 jewelry stores using the same MO as the London Graff store in 2003. A well-dressed individual would walk into one of these super high-end jewelry stores, prop open the security door, which the other members of the group would then enter through. Most of these high-end jewelry stores have buzzer entry systems at the very least, or are appointment only, so you can't just push the door open and walk in off the street. The group would then smash and grab, leaving the scene with backpacks full of jewelry in usually stolen older model cars.
But if that system doesn't work, they have also been known to just drive straight through the store's front window and leave the same way with backpacks filled with jewelry. Well, that's not technically true. They reverse at high speed. So they can then drive away faster, and so the airbags don't usually deploy on impact because you're going backwards.
There you go.
And this was a tactic of a cell of Pink Panthers in Dubai 2007 when they drove two rented Audis through the Wafi Mall and into the Dubai Graff store, leaving with around £8 million worth of jewellery and watches. The Guardian claims that the gang only use Audis as getaway cars, as you don't use a car you're not familiar with. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, also, I'd be more worried about, is it left-hand drive, is it right-hand drive, things like that.
Yeah, because you're flopping all over the place in these different countries, like...
And the group had no qualms about hitting graph again. They actually had no qualms about hitting the exact same flagship graph store in London more than once. We'll get onto that in a minute.
Oh, God.
But the group, or this cell of Pink Panthers, came undone in Dubai, though, when DNA was recovered from the rented Audis, which had been rented using the robbers' real names and phone numbers. And the phone numbers and DNA linked the eight men to other thefts across Europe.
Whoops.
Now, some sources say that the cars were actually stolen, and the model, which was an S8, which was fairly rare in Dubai in 2007, apparently. Mm. So the cars were actually stolen in Abu Dhabi, which is one of the other Emirates, mm-hmm. in the United Arab Emirates, and driven across the desert to Dubai. Sources also vary on the year, whether it's 2007 or 2008, but at this point, I don't think it makes much difference, to be honest. But it's a very different, you know, between rented them in their own name.
Yeah.
And stole them. Because this is like a group that's clearly very highly organized.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we don't have time to go through every single one of the Pink Panthers heists, or even who's been identified, arrested, convicted, and then sprung from prison. The list is honestly seemingly endless.
Yeah.
Instead, we'll talk about some of the most commonly talked about heists linked to the Pink Panthers. So, as well as hitting Graff's flagship store in London in 2003, a Pink Panther cell hit them again in 2005 for just a small robbery, stealing only a measly £1 million worth of jewelry.
I mean, it's hardly worth doing,
honestly,
is it?
Honestly, it's like $3 million or bust, baby. And then again, in 2009, now here, they did it right, because they got away with 43 pieces of jewelry worth £40 million.
Yeah, I mean,
that's like $1 million a piece. That's impressive.
Yeah. Like, when you get to jewelry that costs this much, this is when my mind starts, like, to just be like, that's just monopoly money at this point.
Why would you even wear that? Like, I just don't understand. Like, what if you scratch it? Like, I can't.
I've got necklaces and stuff that were, like, 40, 50, 60 pound.
Yeah.
And I'm scared to wear them, because yeah. I'm like, what if it breaks?
I think we talked about this before. Maybe the fake heiress episode or something.
Of course. Yeah, I think
but
so.
But like, my wedding ring only cost about £300. And, but like, I'm terrified. And it's already, the way that it's designed, it's like sandblasted white gold. So it's got little like pockmarks in it and imperfections by design.
Hmm.
But I'm terrified of like scratching it even more and like fucking it up somehow.
Yeah, like I've got a ring that was my great grandmother's engagement ring. So I don't know how much it's worth, but it's like, it's white gold. It's got five little diamonds set in. There's a tiny bit of platinum.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know how much it's worth. I know it's not worth like massive amounts. But like, I've worn it a few times, but then I'm like, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I don't want to, like, what if I lose it? And what, because my mum lost one of the diamonds and had to replace it once, so I know that one of them has come out before.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, what if the others are loose?
Yeah, like, can't deal with that. But alas, some people make jewelry that expensive. And apparently, some people buy it, and some people steal it. And in this case...
Yeah.
So in 2008, a cell of Pink Panthers were found guilty of carrying out a series of robberies across the south of France in Cannes, Saint-Tropez, and Biarritz. Not the same Biarritz robbery that we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, though. Three Pink Panthers were arrested in Monaco in June 2009 after loitering in Monte Carlo's famous casino square. A jewelry store in Monaco had been hit by the Pink Panthers in 2007.
Also, I forgot to put in the script the robberies in the south of France, Cannes, Saint-Tropez, and Biarritz. I think it was Biarritz. They got away by speedboat.
Oh, this is just James Bond shit right here.
Mm. And also, just gonna say, Monaco is literally home to the richest people in the world who don't want to pay tax, even though they won't notice it being paid out of their bank accounts. So, like, every inch is going to be covered in security cameras. Like, you're not getting away with stealing rich people things in Monaco.
No. No, definitely not. Also, like, a traditional, like, gambling city like Monaco, like Vegas, is crawling with cameras and security and stuff. Like,
yeah.
The house always has an eye in the sky, no matter where you are in the city. So, like, come on now. So the three included supposed Pink Panthers founder, one of Interpol's most wanted, having been on the run since breaking out of prison in 2005. And according to BuzzFeed, he escaped from prison once again and has never been recaptured.
Right, so I looked through Interpol's Red List database. So the Red List is people who are wanted for arrest, for prison sentences, mm-hmm. things like that. So you can just go onto Interpol's website, go to their Red List, and you just type in a name you're looking for, or you filter by nationality, gender, etc., or by keywords such as Pink Panther. And I sort of fell down a bit of a Red Notice rabbit hole. Last Friday night, I was like, every article that had like names in from, I was like copying and pasting into the Red List database. Mm-hmm. I didn't find any results from any of the names of the Pink Panthers. Not just like going by like everyone by nationality, like Serbian, Bosnian, and Montenegrin. Mm-hmm. Didn't find any of the names that we've come across in our research. Well, if you are at a loose end one night and want to fall down a rabbit hole that's not Wikipedia, just Google Interpol Red List, Interpol Red Notice, and search away, because there's like 7,000 Red Notices currently active.
Damn. Who knows? You could have seen one of them at the shops the other day.
Yeah. So, but yeah, none of the men arrested in Monaco were on it, so I don't know if he's still on the... Maybe I've just given up.
Yeah, they're like, look, no prison can hold him, so...
Yeah. I mean, after so many times you've broken out, maybe they're just like... Maybe it's like three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, yeah, you're literally just out. You could stay out. So, you've got your new hobby, everyone. Get to it. Now, Graff in London wasn't the only store to be hit twice. Harry Winston Boutique in Paris was hit by a cell in 2007, and they returned to hit the same boutique a year later, dressed as women, of course. Over the two thefts, they stole £76 million worth of jewelry. And stolen cars weren't the only getaway vehicles used by the Pink Panthers. In 2005, a cell dressed as airport workers in Amsterdam and transferred €75 million worth of stolen jewels to a waiting private jet. Nice. Now, during one of their Saint-Tropez heists in 2005, the group escaped via speedboat, as we mentioned before. Always.
That was Saint-Tropez, not Biarritz. Yeah.
Either way. Always fun. And now, as well as Europe, the Middle East, and North America, the group have also carried out at least two smash-and-grab robberies in Japan. But during the second heist, they used tear gas to subdue three saleswomen and stole about $2 million worth.
Now, while the Pink Panthers are considered the most successful and prolific jewel thief network ever, not including the British monarchy, they have also branched out into art.
Of course.
Carrying out the biggest art heist in European history in 2008. The group stole 100 48 million euros worth of art from a gallery in Zurich, including a Van Gogh and a Monet.
Wow.
They've also been active as recently as 2018, when a cell stole $2 million worth of jewellery from an exhibition at, right, I don't know how you pronounce this, this palace in Venice.
Doge Palace, I believe.
Doge, is that how you say it?
I think.
At Doge Palace in Venice. If that's not it's not how you pronounce it, blame Taylor, she told me. And that included a pair of earrings and a brooch belonging to the Qatari royal family. The theft took place on the last day of a four-month-long Treasures of the Mughals and Maharajas exhibition, which exhibited a collection of 5 centuries of Indian craftsmanship, according to The Guardian. And that is the story of the Pink Panthers, or what we know about them, at least.
Yeah, they were busy.
Yeah.
Or they are busy.
Well, if there's 800 of them.
Yeah.
They've got enough people.
True. And this could just be like, yeah, you could have no repeats, basically, and still have half the group to get through. So.
Yeah. What's really interesting is that not apart from the ring that was found in the face cream, which gave them, you know, the name, the Pink Panthers, none of the jewelry has ever been found. So that's like $1 billion worth of jewelry that's never been found. So nobody knows how it's fenced, who buys it, because that much jewelry, it's got to show up somewhere.
Well, yeah, and like if these pieces individually are worth so much money, like they're probably using stones that are like known in the jewelry community. Like they probably have name, well, like the, what would the millennium
necklace
thing, like you'd think that they would be recognizable pieces, even if they were broken down into their component parts to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So,
because like the precious metals, the gold, the platinum, the silver, whatever. Well, I don't think they're going as low as lowbrow as silver, gold, and platinum. Yeah, you could melt that down.
Yeah.
And you could probably fence that.
Yeah.
The actual gems themselves.
Yeah.
When they're that expensive, that kind of quality, there's a shit ton of paperwork. But also, if you have like a really good forgery network going.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd be able to forge that network, that paperwork. Or if you've got that kind of access, that kind of money, you pay somebody to make it, to, you know, go through the various legal channels for certifying gems.
Yeah. Or, yeah, or you work with, you know, a craftsman jeweler to reset them and, you know, work them into new pieces that you can sell on a sort of like black market or something.
Yeah.
Without kind of revealing the history, maybe. I don't know. It's really interesting because you would think that like they would show somewhere. Up somewhere.
Yeah, you would, like somewhere one of them has to pop up somewhere.
Unless they're all just like trading them amongst themselves of like, well, I got this diamond from Paris. I'll trade you for $3 million and that sapphire you got in Dubai, like,
yeah,
who knows.
Yeah, but that's like the Dubai heist also involved watches, which are probably easier to move on.
Yeah, definitely.
Crazy it is. And the idea that there's no sort of traditional structure to this organization
yeah
is kind of what fascinates me.
Yeah, it does seem more like a how do I put this? It's like a, yeah, it's not like a group and it's not like a collective, but it's kind of like an ideology almost. Mm. Like more so than this is something that we all have decided to do. Instead, it's like this is something that we are almost.
Yeah.
Like we're just all gonna be jewel thieves.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really, but, it's crazy.
But then going back to like what the that New Yorker article says about like trafficking in the former Yugoslavian countries during the war and the years after, like it probably is quite easy to fall into it if you are literally trafficking food and soap and fuel and things to start with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the things that we need to survive. It probably is quite easy to then end up trafficking drugs and guns and, you know, a few diamonds here and there.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But, yeah. Also, nobody has ever cooperated with law enforcement or implicated anyone else.
Snitches get stitches. Which,
well, yeah. But also that kind of feeds into this idea that nobody knows anything and that there's no organization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, like, to be fair, could just be that, like, people are telling everyone that there's no overarching organization, there's no leader, per se, when actually there could be. They just don't want to tell anyone. Yeah.
Have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
A long time ago, but yes.
Right, so you know how they've all got the nicknames, you know, Mr. Black, Mr. White, Mr. Pink, mm-hmm. whatever. And Mr. Pink doesn't want to be called Mr. Pink, and he's like, why can't I be Mr. Purple or something? And the boss, whose name I forget, because it's a long time since I've seen it as well, and he says, oh no, there's a Mr. Purple on another job. Uh-huh. That kind of organization could also make sense. Like, you've got little cells here and there that do all the different jobs, and there could be one mastermind overseeing all of it.
Yeah, totally.
Or like a commission overseeing it all. But yeah, the idea that there's no there's just no management, no upper management, I'm like, no, somebody knows,
somebody has to be in charge of this whole shebang.
But also, they're all getting sprung from prison, so...
Yeah.
Like, why say anything when you're like, well, in a couple of years' time, they're going to get me out, so...
Honestly, though, like, just sit tight till your buddies come and get you.
But yeah. But because there's, like, so little known, and because it's such, like, a sprawling group, pretty much any theory you can twist to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whether it's just they're all ex-military or ex-paramilitary, and they're like, well, what does an ex-paramilitary do when the war's over?
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of demand. You know?
Yeah.
Well, we'll go do this.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's... it could be anything and everything, pretty much.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Pink Panthers. Hide your diamonds in your cold cream, everyone.
Wrap it in cling film
first. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe, like, put a, make, like, a fake bottom in the jar or something. Just, yeah. Just so sticky. Nothing. So, if you like the show, be sure to rate and review us on your podcast app, especially Apple Podcasts, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode where we talk about stuff like crimes and also not crimes sometimes, but it's fine. Don't worry about it. And if you want to get some cool Square Mile merch, we do have a selection of products that you can choose, and they have cool designs, and you can purchase them for your wearing and using delight. And we have links for those in our show notes and on our website and at squaremileofmurder.store if you like to, you know, go old school and just put a web address right into the little box in your browser.
I mean, you, if you really wanted to, you could type www. at the beginning as well.
You could. You don't have to, though. But you could.
No, but if you want to go real old school. Yeah.
Well, you could do https://www.squaremilemurder.store. But don't add a .com because that won't work.
No.
So, yeah.
If you would like to help us cover the costs of making this podcast and help us invest in the future of the show, because why would you ever want this to end?
And help us invest in all of the diamonds that we need to buy to be fancy people now.
You can join our Patreon page. Tiers start at just £1 per month. Every patron gets regular episodes a day early, a shout out on the show, priority case requests, and a lifetime discount on merch. And that's just for £1 a month, £12 a year. As the tiers go up, you get even more, including bonus episodes and exclusive stationery merch that you can't buy anywhere. We also have our blog. The blog is back, finally, if you haven't seen it. And that's free for everyone, but it is on Patreon. So go to patreon.com/squaremileofmurder. Links are in all the usual places. But yeah, you can sign up. You can give us money, or you can just read the blog for free and take part in our Yeti versus Aliens poll.
Yes, do it. So I know I've mentioned previously on this show that I was very disappointed in all of our patrons for not voting in the Yetis versus Aliens poll. Like, we voted, because there's, like, each a vote for Yetis, me, and aliens, you. But
yeah,
when I was going through, so that poll is now public, so anybody can vote. And it's linked in the blog post. Don't worry, guys, I got you. But people voted for, like, boring stuff, like avalanches and government cover-ups. So I'm...
Aliens, guys.
Yetis, obviously. There's also an option for Yetis and aliens working together, though, if you favor that theory. If you have no idea what we're talking about, you should really sign up for Patreon for just like a minute so you can go listen to this bonus episode. Because
I think that was it for everyone, that bonus episode.
No, it was for £5, and then the lesser known similar incidents were for all patrons. So.
Ah. So yeah, just give us £5. You can listen to that and a bunch of other episodes, and then just abandon ship next month.
Just hit and run, honestly.
Smash and grab.
Yeah, see? We're learning things here today.
Do you think anyone's still listening?
I hope not.
Yeah, thanks for listening if you're still here. We will be back next week with our last June episode before going to
July,
which is a fun month. Yep. It's also my birthday.
Yep.
We'll be back. Patrons, you will have your bonus episodes soon.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone else, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.